WFDU Radio Teaneck.
Welcome to Radar, a weekly radio program and podcast that features an in-depth look at new releases across all mediums, featuring exclusive interviews with the content creators. Radar can be heard each Sunday morning at 5 a.m. on WFDU 89.1 FM or anytime online at thevinyldistrict.com. Here is your host, Evan Toth.
The word icon is thrown around a lot these days, but some folks just qualify as gosh darn icons with no tired cliches attached. When it comes to radio icons, if you had to pick a few big ones, cousin Brucey Morrow would be right there near the top of Modulation Mountain. He's been there, done that, seen it all, even introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium with Ed Sullivan. His voice was hard to miss on the radio in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s until he moved to satellite radio in 2005. But there was something that was always calling Cousin Brucey back to the radio. In this case, it was John A. Katsimatidis, who literally called Brucey during his shows every Saturday night. After Katsimatidis purchased WABC in 2019, he knew he wanted to hear great music on his station, and there was only one person who he saw fit to bring it back to a New York City audience via the airwaves, Cousin Brucey. Brucey returns to the station where his career began in 1961 with a brand new show on Saturday night at 6 p.m. where he goes head-to-head on the airwaves at the same time slot as yours truly. But we're not rivals. In fact, Brucey called me his cousin, which is really all I could have hoped to hear from this radio legend. He's warm. He's engaging. He's one of those guys that you expect won't have enough time for you and then makes you feel as if you're the only one in the world. He's had practice connecting with people, and it shows. In this interview, we discuss his storied career, calming down a nervous John Lennon, his time on satellite, and how there's no place like home on the radio airwaves, beaming from an antenna and blanketing New York City. Pull up a chair, cousin. We're all family here. You know you're a big radio cheese if the Four Seasons recorded a song about you. Cousin Brucey, this is Evan Toth. Yes, how are you?
Hello, Evan. How do you do? Nice talking to you. Thank you for calling.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with me.
Pleasure. My pleasure, Cousin Evan.
That's all I wanted to hear, or the whole conversation. That's the only thing I wanted to hear you say was
okay.
Call me.
Nice talking to you, Cousin Evan.
Very Bye-bye. Good. See you later. So you are back on WABC where you worked for 13 years starting in 1961, and tell us about the new show. What's going on? Well, you're back on the radio.
Probably, yeah, that's exactly, you know, you say back on the radio. That's great. That's what you just said, right?
That's what I just said.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And let me explain that. Let me amplify what you just said. I think that's brilliant. about, you know, I just had a very successful, good 15 years on Sirius XM. As you know, it was very enjoyable. I had a good time. But about 10 years or so in, I started realizing that I wasn't in radio anymore. I was in this corporate entity. It was broadcast. It was satcasting, right?
Right.
But I wasn't in radio. I started realizing, I didn't know what it was. I knew something was missing. Now, I was born to be a broadcaster. I've been doing this for pretty much most of my life, since my teen years. And I love radio. But for the 15 years, there was something, I don't know. Then I realized one day what it was. It's a major corporation, and it's not broadcasting.
Right.
It's not local. Right? It doesn't have that local feeling / national. Now, there's no such thing as local radio anymore, as you know, right? Today, with the digital world that we live in,
right,
the internet, with streaming, with Alexa, with Google, with Siri, there's no such thing as a local radio station anymore. It's locally originated, but you're reaching the world. It's quite amazing. Like I tell people a little silliness. If you open your refrigerator, I guarantee you I'm going to be with the ice cubes.
Right.
I'll be there, right? No matter where, we can show up. It doesn't matter anymore. So I started getting a little antsy. And what happened is that during my shows on Saturday, the Saturday Brucey show, I started receiving a call once in a while, once a month or bi-monthly, from a guy named John and his wife, Margot. And we got very friendly. You get to know your regulars who call.
Right, people call, right.
And he requested songs, but I had no idea who John was, you know, and Margot. I had no idea. And one day, I read that WABC Radio was bought by a person. I said, how can a person buy this monster mega radio station, which is historic? How does somebody buy that kind of radio station?
Right.
Well, sure enough, this guy writes out a personal check, you know, which is even crazier, right, to me. How does somebody have the wherewithal to do that? Well, somebody told me that this guy, John, who calls me all the time on Sirius, is the guy that bought WABC. Well, the next time I talked to him, he told me, Bruce, I'm buying WABC. And I said, you know, we want to talk. He says, give me about a year. And we talked several times during that year. And I said, I want to talk to you about it. Well, a year passes. And sure enough, that's the guy. And he and I made a deal on the phone.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John, Big John,
Big Bad John,
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen, and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land, Big John.
Big John, Big John,
Big Bad John,
Big John.
Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when a timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast, and everybody thought that they'd breathed their last except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John.
Big John, Big John,
Big Bad John,
Big John.
And with all of his strength he gave a mighty shove. Then a miner yelled out, there's a light up above. And 20 men scrambled from a would-be grave. And now there's only one left down there to save, Big John. With jacks and timbers they started back down. Then came that rumble way down in the ground, and as smoke and gas belched out of that mine, everybody knew it was the end of the line for Big John.
Big John,
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Now they never reopened that worthless pit. They just placed a marble stand in front of it. These few words are written on that stand. At the bottom of this mine lies a big, big man. Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
One day after my contract ended at Sirius, because we were negotiating with him for, I think, a while, and my lawyer was in there, Judy Tint, and Judy related to me what they wanted to do, and I said, no, not acceptable, not interested. Of course, all the while, I wanted to get out.
Right.
So I told him, not interested. And the day after that, that we said not interested, I signed a deal with John and WABC. So I just wanted to get back into radio, like you said at the beginning of this conversation. That's why I jumped when you said that. I missed the local feel. Although we cannot have local anymore, we have a national footprint now. So you have another responsibility. But you have the responsibility to your local market, which in this case of this market, WABC, reaches, you know, a huge, quad state market. So you're not dealing with a radio station with a 50 or 100-mile footprint. So you have a whole new feeling. But the feeling is going to be New York, New Jersey. That's what we want, and right. That's what I'm going to do. And that's what the show's all about. And it's going to have that sound, the New York sound, which people like. People like it. People really like the idea of the Big Apple sound, and that's what we're going to do.
And tell me about, you're on Saturday night. And by the way, I'm on Saturday. This is going to be on WFDU. We are one of the last local kind of stations in the New Jersey, New York City area, even though we, of course, are streaming globally as well.
Right.
But tell me about that magical Saturday night spot. You seem to end up there many times in your career, Saturday night. There's something about Saturday night in New York City.
Well, I think, Sunday night is a time that people like, you toil all during the week, you get ready, and then the weekend's here, you got Friday, you got Saturday, Sunday's the time to relax from Saturday, right? And Saturday night's the time to let it loose, let it all hang out, just get out and have a good time.
Right.
Now, albeit with what we've been going through for the last many months, we have been living in a nightmare. So now the time is even riper for Saturday night, albeit though, my cousin, every day is Sunday, is Saturday night, or every day is Monday. That's what I always tell people. What day is it? I always think it's Monday. Right. I have no idea. We don't have any idea what day it is anymore,
right.
And we don't care, right? So, but Saturday night traditionally is a night to have a party. Well, we need a party right now. And people need an escape. They need a connection. I'm a connection. Right, I connect to them, and they connect to me, and we need this escape right now. We want to forget about the damn politics and the damn virus and everything else, all the other horrors in our lives right now. And it's all getting to be, I mean, way too much. The nation is anxiety-ridden. We're all angry. We don't like each other. Everybody's on one side or another side, right? So here's an opportunity for you and me on a Saturday to give people a chance to say, hey, let's lay it down for a couple moments. Let's have these few hours, and let's just have a good time with music and the Cuz and with you, right? And just have a good time with it. And that's what Saturday's all about. It's sort of like an armistice. There was that movie, World War One movie, where it was Christmas evening. I don't know if you remember that.
Right, right.
And Noel, I think it was called, where the German troops and the French troops laid down their arms at midnight. And they all had a party together.
Right.
And they all relaxed, right? Instead of shooting and killing each other, they relaxed. And then they realized, hey, this is going to work. So that's what I'm hoping for. A long answer to a quick question. But I'm hoping that these few hours will give people a chance to escape and let them get a modicum of what it was like and what it could be again once we get rid of these nightmares.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a, I think the name of your show should be Cease Fire. Cease Fire.
That's not bad.
Not sure how to set yourself apart in today's competitive job market? Why not become an expert in your field with a graduate degree or certificate from FDU? At Fairleigh Dickinson University, whether you want to develop your skills or get that promotion, now's the perfect time to take advantage of our special reduced tuition. Register for graduate and certificate courses today and set yourself up for success. Visit fdu.edu/graduate today to get ahead. Right here, right now.
You know, I was interviewing, I'm based here in New Jersey, and I was interviewing a young New Jersey songwriter. Her name is Nicole Atkins, and we were talking about the influence of music, of 50s music, on her music. And she grew up in the Asbury Park area, and I brought up to her, you know, how WCBS and the oldies really influenced folks that were our age. And again, I'm 41. And I said, you know, did you get CBS by you? And she immediately said, oh, yeah, yeah, Cousin Brucey, of course. And, you know, but during those peak WCBS years, you know, you were influencing millions of folks my age and our generation with that great music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But, you know, those songs were oldies to you, but they were new to us. And do you ever think about that connection? You ever hear about that from people?
Yes, all the time. For me, I'm very fortunate because me, it goes back to WABC and WCBS and CBS FM.
Right.
So I have a double whammy there. Yes. You know, I have a theory, and it's more than a theory. It's almost a quasi-science, that all music is based or gets its experience or its warmth from the decade before. It always happens. So somebody, a songwriter of today, will definitely have a feeling of the 60s and the 50s as the 40s gave to the 50s. You look at listen to something like the Mills Brothers and the Ink Spots in the Platters, right? You'll hear a lot of 40s in that. And then it goes on, 50s, 60s, 70s, and so on. So today you get like you get the all kinds of groups today, and you hear something familiar or you are comfortable with it. Songwriters do that, the poets do that, and of course the producers know that put a little bit of calmness in there, a little bit of familiarity, and you got it. It breeds, you don't have a slogan they've always had, familiarity breeds content.
Right.
And it does. So you're absolutely correct. She does. She is aware in her writing, whether she does it in her DNA or she does it consciously, it's there. It has to be there. It always influences every decade.
And, you know, here in the New York City area, and the Beatles are so so widely loved nowadays, all the interviews I do for this program, it all comes back to the Beatles. Everybody wants to talk about the Beatles. But, you know, it almost felt like CBS at that time, in the 80s and the 90s, like, you guys were really carrying that Beatles torch. I mean, a little bit on classic rock radio too, but you know, you were playing the old Beatles stuff, you were playing the later Beatles stuff. It's almost like you helped, at least in this area, you helped to kind of keep the Beatles music really alive when maybe, I don't know, maybe it could have changed there if they didn't have a life on the radio during those years.
Well, I, you know, not only CBS, first of all, remember, WABC became WA Beatles C. I'll give you some history,
right,
which will make people smile when they hear that. WA Beatles C, right? Right? Then CBS FM took the torch, because when ABC went all talk, conservative talk generally, CBS grabbed the torch. And yeah, we carried on the great tradition. This was carried on throughout the country. It wasn't obviously CBS FM a major player, but it was carried on almost all over the country. The Beatles became sort of a common denominator. They became part of our DNA because of when they came out, you know, in that era of the 63 and 64, 65. So by the time we got on CBS FM, yeah, they were pretty well established. All we had to do was carry the torch.
Right.
And the torch, because once again, if you look at that, those days in the 80s, 90s, I mean, we were really in deep trouble. Not like we're in today. I mean, little did we know what was going to happen to our lives. We thought it was pretty bad in those days, and right. It was. We had, you know, we had political strife, racial strife, which we still have. We had assassinations. We had, I mean, financial problems, economic problems all over the world. But little did we know what we were going to go through today. So therefore, think about what you just said, and that's why we must take this music that makes people feel good music, and continue doing it. Everybody needs a resting place. Everybody needs that connection, that escape. And that's what we do. And that's what I intend to do. And I'm going to continue doing that as long as I have breath. And boy, let me tell you, I have a lot of hot air in me.
You got plenty of breath, it sounds like there, Cousin Brucey.
Plenty.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog.
belong to you. I find the things that you do will make me feel all right. You know I feel all right. You know I feel all right.
Tell us about the new show. You're going to be playing oldies, but are you leaning on anything or in particular? Or you know,
well,
the definition of oldies has changed in the last 30 years, too, right?
Yeah. You know, the word oldies is kind of interesting, but it's all right. It's become almost generic. It's music. You know, it's music that you're comfortable with. And
right.
Look, any music that you're comfortable with counts. So what I'm going to be doing, and it's very, I'm going to tell you why, 50s, 60s, 70s, and I was thinking of even going into the 80s. However, my producers and directors said absolutely no. Absolutely not. You know who the producers and directors are?
Mm-hmm.
It's called social media.
Right.
Holy cow, did I get it. You can't do the 80s. It's 50s, 60s, 70s. You can't do, everyone's playing the 80s. You are, and they really leased into me. I mean, I'm talking about thousands of emails, right? So that quickly changed. So today, you know, another thing that's changed in this digital world is that the people who have become so much more sophisticated, those people, our audience are so sophisticated, Evan, they know exactly what they want. And you're going to give it to them, and I'm going to give it to them. So what I do is, the show is 60s based. That's what I see. That's all my feeling, my gut feeling. And that's my, I love, that's my comfort zone and my love zone.
Right.
I love the 50s. I love the doo-wop, because if it wasn't for the 50s, the Chuck Berrys and some of the doo-wop groups and the Everly Brothers and Jerry Lee, we wouldn't have had the 60s. And the 60s begat the 70s. And as we said before, it keeps on going. So it's 50s, 60s, 70s. Now, here's something that might surprise you.
Sure.
You want to hear this? This one, this is great.
There's
two things that happen in social media. They want to hear the jingles. Those jingles from WABC era,
yeah,
those 1960s type jingles are as important almost as the music. It gives the entire, it's the whipped cream on the cake. You have a great cake, here's the whipped cream and the cherries.
Yes.
So the jingles, we got all the jingles. We have all the jingles. Our program vice president, his name is Dave Labrosi, got a hold of PAM, which is owned by a guy named Jonathan Wolford, who runs that, who made the original jingles. He gave them back to us. We got them all. I got them all.
Retro Radio, WFDU, Evan Toth.
So I'm playing that. Then there's one other thing that shocked me. You want to hear a shocker?
I want to hear a shocker. Shock me.
Okay, listen to this. Listen to this. When I was doing my shows during this pandemic, I did a lot of my shows from where you're talking to me. I'm up on my home upstate New York now. So I have this little box called a Comrex, which you probably are familiar with. You can broadcast from anywhere in the world. You just take a cable and plug it into the Ethernet, and this magic box, you're on the air live perfectly, stereo, and it sounds great. So I did all my shows from there. Now, in the Comrex, because of the time of our lives, I didn't have my echo or my reverb on the Sirius XM that time. When I'm in the studio, I have it if I want. But no. And I got used to it. I said, you know, it's 2020. Maybe it's time to get rid of that wetness, that warmth that they call reverb. Well,
yeah,
once
you sound
again,
like you're in the steam
forget
room.
Forget it. You know, as I said in the movie, forget about it.
Right.
Forget about it. Forget it. The audience, the social media, once again, with jingles, the next thing they wanted was the reverb. Well, they got it. It's going to, albeit a little different. Now, today, of course, it's years ago, it was mechanical, then it was analog, now it's all digital, right? And you can control it pretty well. So I experimented last Saturday with it, and I think I reached a happy medium whereby it doesn't sound like I'm in somebody's barrel outside their home.
Right.
It sounds fine. It gives, now what reverb does, honestly, it gives you a little warmth. It gives you a little bit of, what do I say? Warmth's a good word. I think it's warmth besides that little, you know, roundness and three dimension.
Right.
But it gives you a little warmth. So why not? They ask for it. Once again, they're the producers and directors. I go that way, and I want to know what music they want to hear. So they have a great influence on what goes on the air.
Do you think I should, when I produce this interview, should I just douse it in reverb and echo?
Don't you dare. No, don't you dare.
Okay, I won't. Maybe just that one section I will.
Okay.
But, you know, back to the radio and the difference between the radio and serious internet, you know, we take the internet and we take social media for granted today.
But can you take us back
to those early days when you got started in radio, even as a kid, and tell us about the role of radio, you know, when you really caught the radio bug. How does that compare to how social media works today?
Well, it's very, very similar. I mean, you know, we just call it a socialization. It was part of our society. We didn't have, whoever dreamed of having the entire world made into a tiny city, and that's what we have today.
Right.
But in those days, you know, we relied really mostly on each other. We had radio, we had our newspapers, we had colleges, we had schools, and that was, you know, socialization was very important. Our culture really relied upon one-on-one. That's what we had. Radio grew, so radio gave us a new dimension. But even that, it was like not as monstrous as it is today, and we didn't rely upon it for everything we do. Today, this digital world of ours, which we are just seeing the early crumbs of, gosh knows what's going to happen in the next 10 years. I mean, what we're seeing right now, you can hear me on Siri, you can hear me on Alexa, is very weird. It's very strange. But in those days, we didn't have anything like that. So it was much simpler. The world was much calmer because we were much calmer. We didn't have choices.
Right.
Today, there's a problem. I mean, it's wonderful. I love technology. But maybe we have too many choices. And I think it gets us a little nervous. We don't know where to go sometimes. But it does add to our lives. I'm happy. My iPhone and your iPhone, I mean, you know, our cell phones, can you imagine life without it? I mean, give it some thought for a moment. These things are brand new.
Right.
I mean, considering where we, you know, our history, what are they? What, 10, 15 years old?
Right.
How old is the cell phone? So did we get along without them? How did we live without these things? I mean, today, you can, a kid or even, I wouldn't know what to do if I didn't have my cell phone. It's connectivity, connection, right? We had connection in those days, in the 50s and 60s and 40s, it was a different kind of connection.
Right.
We had telephones, right? We had, people used to write letters. I don't know, you probably don't know what that is.
Sure,
they used to write letters. Nah, you don't know what that is. You used to seal an envelope and seal it with a kiss, smack, right? Put a stamp on it. People would write letters, right? Right? There was no emails or texts or Twitters or blitters or whatever the heck people are doing today, which I think is great. I use them all the time. But my cell phone, I'm just thinking, if you said to me you can't have it anymore, I freak out. I wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
And yet, what the heck is it? It's just the world civilization almost survived. Almost, I said, survived without these things. But as things grow, and we get to want to use them, they become part of our DNA and our everyday lives. Well, you can't do without it. That's what's happening today. And every day, something new happens. It's wild. Wild.
Now, if you feel that you can't go on, because all of your hope is gone, and your life is filled with much confusion, until happiness is just an illusion, and your world around is crumbling down, darling, reach out. Come on, girl. Reach on out for me.
to you.
And speaking about technology, and we're talking about radio and communication here, you know, I watched that Ron Howard Beatles film the other day, and the Shea Stadium parts, and the technology of the sound that was in Shea Stadium, and those, you know, I can't believe you were there. Can you bring us back there a little bit? Tell us about that day.
Well, you know, I introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium with Ed Sullivan. There's just some great stories. I'll tell you a real quick one.
Sure.
We were in the dugout just before showtime, and, you know, they had a lot of these acts that were warming up the crowd, which I felt sorry for because nobody gave a damn who was on the stage.
Right.
They were there for one reason. John Lennon and Paul McCartney come over to me in this, and first of all, you couldn't hear the cacophony, the sound, the audio of the audience was deafening. I have a sort of a little silly thing I say. Con Edison, which everyone knows that's our utility in New York,
right.
Supplies that occasionally supplies electricity, et cetera, et cetera. A little sarcasm.
Right, of course.
Now, they do a good job. I always say they could have turned the turbines off that day because there was so much electricity in that 65,000 to 70,000 people in that stadium, all there for one reason, to see the boys, right? There was so much electricity there. To this day, I can conjure that up in my chest. So we're in the dugout, and John Lennon comes over to me with McCartney, and he says to me, "Cousin." He always called me Cousin.
Cousin.
Cousin. Is this going to be okay? As I say, they were very scared, because even with all of their riots and the people rushing them and going crazy over in Europe, they had never felt the pressure, the extreme pressure on their bodies, right, as they felt at Shea Stadium that day. And I said to him, I was very scared too, because I've never felt anything like this with all the shows, and I've done a lot of shows, but never anything like this. So I sort of crossed my fingers in my pocket, and I was lying to him. I said, "John, no problem. They're here for one reason. They're here to share space with you, to show their love." And I was saying to myself, "God, let that be true," because anything could have happened. When we walked up the, I call it the scaffold at home base, Ed Sullivan was in front of me. You know, Ed Sullivan, a very, very good shoot. Right?
Course.
We're going up there, and he turns around to me as we're about to introduce the Beatles. Everybody's ready. The audience is primed and pumped. And he says to me, "Cousin Brucey, is this going to be safe?" Because he didn't have a clue. He didn't have a clue of the power of these people and the power of the audience.
Right.
Very different. And I said to him, "I don't think so, Ed. I don't think it's going to be safe." I figured I wanted to kick him a little bit because I knew he didn't even know the Beatles. He takes another step, turns around, and he says, "Brucey, what do we do?" And I knew I had him. And I said to him, quote, "Ed, pray." And he looked at me with his eyes popping like he did. And he said, "Pray? Pray?" And he walked up. Now, postscript to this story, after we introduced the Beatles, Sullivan and myself, the police asked me to escort them around, you know, the perimeter of Shea Stadium. They talk to the kids, see if we can pry their fingers off the wire and the gates that they set up and the barricades, and which we did. Nobody really got hurt that day. Mm. Everything was reasonably calm. They were there. I was right, which I didn't know. They were there just to share space. There was so much love in that place. Now, your original statement, the Beatles couldn't hear themselves. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. They heard, after a while, they stopped singing a little bit. They stopped singing. They couldn't hear themselves because they had these fold-back systems on the stage, you know, monitors to hear. They couldn't hear those things. So they did the best they could. About a year ago was the very first time that I had the opportunity of actually hearing Shea Stadium that day. Somebody brought me a CD. And, you know, there were some bootleg CDs they kicked out. And they played one for me. And it was pretty good. It was pretty good. Even with all that mess, they continued singing along a little bit, but they didn't put out. They couldn't hear.
Right.
But that was a day, probably one of the most unusual, powerful days of my life. It really was. I'd never forget it.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable experience.
The Beatles, everybody. They are the greatest. Ladies and gentlemen, they will be here soon. They're ready for you. Are you ready for them? I bet you are. Ladies and gentlemen, they'll be up in a few moments. They are getting themselves ready. And let me tell you, they told Cousin Brucey they can't wait to make this their greatest appearance. What do you think of these fabulous Beatles? Let's hear it for them. Let them hear it in the dressing room.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it, it's got a backbeat, you can't blues it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, if you wanna dance with me. I got no kick against modern jazz, unless you try to play it too darn fast. They had a jubilee. Them Georgia folks, they had a jamboree. They're drinking homebrew from a wooden cup. The folks are dancing, they got all shook up. I started playing that rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it, gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me, don't get to hear them play a tango, and in the mood they take a mambo. It's way too early for the congo, so keep a rocking that piano. That's why I go for the rock and roll music. Any old time you use it, it's got a backbeat, you can't blues it. Any old time you use it,
out here in New Jersey, you know, where I live, we call each other bro all the time. You know, we don't really say cousin. But, hey, bro, can you tell us where that Cousin Brucey moniker came from? What's the story behind it?
Sure. That? Yeah, you call him bro. You call me bro, it's all right. Just say bro, cuz. Right. Bro, cuz. I'll go for that. I like it. I was at WINS, one of the stations, pretty big station now. It's an all-news station in New York City. A security guard at WINS. About 1958 or 59, something like that, brings this elderly lady in the studio. And he says, do you mind? This lady has a little problem. She wants to talk to you. Well, in those days, we'd allow people in the studio. We weren't afraid of some crazy terrorist group taking over a radio station.
Right.
You know, and we trusted each other. She looked me straight in the eyes. I had these beautiful twinkling eyes. Now, when somebody locks onto your eyes, Cousin Evan, they get you. That's the first thing you should do. Always look at somebody's eyes. You look at someone's face, you look at their eyes. Lock. And she got me. She locked on my eyes.
Right.
And she said to me, quote, Mr. Morrow, do you believe we're all related? Because my name is Bruce Morrow. Most people think my name is Brucey Cousin.
Right.
So I said, yes, I do believe we're all related, ma'am. She said, Well, she said, Cousin, can you lend me 50 cents to get home? I'm broke. Now, I'm a Brooklyn kid, so I knew she was going to come in. I knew she wasn't my audience, this elderly lady. She wasn't interested in Chuck Berry and the Everly Brothers and Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis. She couldn't care about that, right? She wanted 50 cents. So I queued up a record in those days, those little black round things, right, with a hole in the middle, queued it up, ready to go. We didn't have anything digital in those days. You had to start a record mechanically. And I said, sure, ma'am, I'll be very happy to give you 50 cents. I love people, and she was sweet. And I said to her, here you go. And she looked at me with those beautiful twinkly eyes, and she said, Cousin, thank you so much. You're my cousin. She left. I never saw her again. Postscript, she never paid me back.
Never got the 50 cents. Well, listen, if you want me to send you a check, I'd be happy to send you a check for the 50 cents.
No, I think post, P-P-P-P-S, I owe her a few dollars.
Yes, you do. You do. What a great story. You know, you mentioned records and vinyl record. I'm a huge record collector. Records, vinyl records are so hot nowadays, and it's had such a major comeback. You know,
yes.
Can you pontificate just a little about why analog records still remain this viable form of music reproduction with younger listeners?
I mean, you get digital reproduction today. I mean, that's almost like the sound from heaven. It's perfect. Perfect. I mean, how can anything be more perfect? It will in generations to come, right? However, wow, digital. There's one thing missing from digital recordings.
Yeah.
It's called heart and soul.
Right.
It's called the warmth, right? The charm of vinyl, right? Vinyl has a certain depth. A heart, a soul that digital will never have. Digital is too perfect. The human experience is not perfect. And that's what we crave. So we crave digital. Yes, digital has had a huge comeback. I mean, you hold an album today, you hold that album, you look at that art, you hold it with affection. When's the last time you held something digital with affection? You can't hold it. It's zeros and ones. But a record, a piece of vinyl, you touch it, almost like romantically, you touch the black shellac, right? And you're touching something of romance. It was a romantic time, and yet it sounds terrific. It still sounds great, and it has that warmth. There's the answer. It's warmth and romantic.
Right. You must have a great collection at home.
I do. I have a very good collection. Except you want to get a little nauseous.
Good, sure.
Unfortunately, we were up in our home up here. I keep my record collection in the city, and we had a fire. Now, the fire was above us, and unfortunately, when the fire department came in, and they used their hoses, they didn't know, and it dripped down into the place where I store this huge collection. Well, I don't have to tell you what happened.
Yeah.
So I don't even like to think about it. It gets me a little ill.
Yeah.
Gets me nauseous.
Oh.
Yeah. So I lost a lot of it. A lot of it.
Well, that's life, unfortunately, sometimes.
It is.
Things happen.
You know, but it's okay. It's okay. You know where I play my music? You know where the best reproduction is? What do you think?
Where?
Where's the best reproduction? I'm sitting here, and I can think about it
in your head.
The theater of my mind.
Yes.
I'm telling you, there's nothing better. And I even can conjure up vinyl pops. I want.
Absolutely. You're back on the radio, we'll say. We're back on AM. And, you know, back to this idea of soul and romance, you know, that's what the radio's got. I mean, you've got it, and you're bringing it, and you're keeping the music happening. And what's next? What's next for the radio? You know, the radio is people are asking about the radio. I love radio. I love FM. I love AM.
Right.
I love rolling the dial.
And, you know, people are so smart today and so sophisticated with media. I don't think they're thinking about satellite or FM stereo or AM or AM stereo or digital or streaming. They want content. These people, this audience today, they crave content, and they'll go and find it if it's, as I said, in my refrigerator. They're going to look. They will find it.
Well, Cousin Brucey, I thank you for your time.
Well, this has been really good. I hope I didn't sound like a preacher. You know, I feel sometimes that I'm a preacher, which I could have. I think I would like that. I could be maybe my next life, to be a preacher.
Listen,
me talking about this, I mean, the sky's the limit. I love it so much.
As long as you're preaching with your tiger skin jacket on, you know, I mean, that's the kind of preacher I want to see. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, I'm still wearing it when I do my Palisades Park reunions. Yep. Still learning it.
it's really been a pleasure speaking to you, and it's really an honor to talk to you, and having heard your voice for so many years on the radio myself, and as I said, you introduced me to so much terrific music, and as you said, I don't like that word oldies either. It's just it's great music is great music, and you were a key music part of it for my generation as well.
Thank you, Cousin Evan. May I say it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We share a lot of the same feelings. And I love talking to radio professionals. It's not too many of us left, really. Not too many. And I'm proudly to say us, right? You and me and a few others. Thank you so much. Thank you for this time and sharing your audience with me.
Well, thank you as well. And we'll see you on the radio, as they say.
See you on the radio.
Thank you, Cousin Brucey.
Feeling loud and safe.
Radar is produced by Evan Toth in partnership with WFDU 89.1 FM and the Vinyl District. You can hear Radar each Sunday morning at 5 a.m. on WFDU 89.1 FM or anytime online at thevinyldistrict.com.